Track 2. Hello and welcome to the news, recorded on Wednesday the 17th of May. I'm Beth.
I'm Sue.
And I'm Joyce.
And your sound engineers this week are Helen and Martin. And next we would like to say a big thank you to the listeners who have kindly sent us a donation last week towards the funding of our Talking News and magazine. They are Joan Simmons, Thomas Bruin and the Friends of St John's Church. So once again, thank you for your donations, which really count towards the running of the Talking newspaper and magazine. And can we actually remind our listeners this week to check in the house to see if they have any spare wallets lying around, because we seem to be missing quite a few. If you could just pop them in the post, and then we'll get your next copy out to you as soon as possible. And now Sue will start us off with the news.
Wolverhampton is to host its first city centre food festival, which bosses hope will attract 10,000 visitors, it has been revealed. It will feature around 40 food and drink stalls and cooking displays from some of the country's best street food traders over 2 days. A main stage will host live bands, and there will be an open-air cinema and fairground games. The event will be called the City of Wolverhampton Festival of Food and Drink and take place on Saturday, July the 8th and Sunday, July the 9th. The main entrance to the festival will be in Welfram Street, with stalls and activities spread over the Civic Centre, Ceremonial Car Park, St Peter's Car Park and the pedestrian area outside the University of Wolverhampton's and Beaker Paul Building. Wolverhampton Council Strategic Director for Place, Tim Johnson, said, "Food and drink festivals are hugely popular these days, and we are proud to be hosting one in the city this summer. It will be the flagship event for our visitor programme in July and will provide the ideal platform to showcase the city of Wolverhampton on a national scale. There will be a variety of mouth-watering food and drink on offer from producers near and far, and entertainment for all the family." The festival is being organised by William Power of Street Banquets and is being supported by the Council and Wolverhampton Business Improvement District, the BID. It is intended as the showpiece event for the Council's 10-day visitor programme in July. On the Saturday, it will run between 1 and 8pm and on the Sunday between 12 and 7pm. On day one, the main stage will host live bands and comedians, and there will be a champagne and prosecco bar with music, a family area with an open-air cinema and traditional fairground games. On the Sunday, there will be an emphasis on families, including acoustic performances and choirs on the main stage, as well as competitions and games for children. The council said the final festival programme is being developed, and further details will be announced in the coming weeks.
Campaigners behind the multi-million pound restoration of Dudley Hippodrome have to prove that it will not rival Wolverhampton's Grand Theatre before receiving crucial funding. The group leading the project has applied to the Black Country Local Enterprise Partnership, LEP, for more than £100,000 to carry out a feasibility study on the building. However, the LEP could decide not to award funds to a scheme if it feels it could harm another venue. Black Country Hippodrome members have hired solicitors to make their case, but said that they are confident they will get the money. They got into the Landmark Theatre for the first time in February to begin initial works, and will also be focusing on removing asbestos. Steve Daniels from Black Country Hippodrome Group, which is behind the revamp plans, said there was another potential avenue for funding if the LEP does not provide the cash. The group will need to provide evidence that the 1,700-seater Hippodrome will not impact on the famous Grand Theatre by taking custom away. Shows will run from the Hippodrome for the first time in half a century when it opens its doors again, but the building will also act as a conference venue. Mr. Daniels said, "We have got to show that it is not going to have an adverse impact on the Grand when it opens. We are confident we won't be in competition. What we will be doing will be totally different. we will be doing conferences and different things. We are not going to be putting on shows that the Grand puts on. It's not going to be a competition at all. It is hoped that the Hippodrome will open in 2020. The project to completely refurbish it from top to bottom will cost around £5 million. The iconic building has stood empty on Castle Hill since 2009, last used as a bingo hall.
Dudley Council has admitted that a speed camera it installed on one of the Black Country's busiest roads is a fake. The region's police chief, David Jimison, has accused the authority of deceiving the public after bosses installed what he said was nothing more than a metal box. The camera was set up in March on a notorious stretch of the Birmingham New Road near the junction of Woodcroft Avenue on the Dudley-Sandwell border. Council's chief executive, Sarah Norman, admitted it was fake and is part of a wider scheme to dupe the public into believing that a number of speed cameras in the borough are still functioning. She admitted the camera was not operational and said any deception was intended to deter drivers intent on breaking the speed limit. A Freedom of Information request revealed correspondence on the issue between Mrs. Norman and West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner, Mr. Jimison. Describing the situation as an embarrassing episode, Mr. Jimison wrote, "I am deeply concerned that the safety camera that your council has installed on Birmingham New Road is in fact a fake and is not intended to be operational. It really should not be described as a safety camera, it is a metal box. By installing a camera that isn't functioning, a deception has been placed on the public and confidence in road safety measures has been undermined." Mr. Jimison went on to demand that the council urgently clarify the situation with the public. In response, Mrs. Norman wrote, "We have relocated an existing camera housing to a site on the Birmingham New Road to help address a long-standing problem with speeding in that vicinity. This is not the first time Dudley have relocated an obsolete camera and is therefore not an isolated initiative." She continued, "It goes without saying we are not keen to promote the fact that all static safety camera housings in the borough are non-operational, as they would cease to be a deterrent." Mrs. Norman added that the police endorsed the practice of using dummy flashes in fake cameras, and this was still regularly used and no doubt will continue to be used in the future.
"The Black Country will still be a manufacturing world beater after Brexit," said David Davis. David Davis said he also believed the election of French President Emmanuel Macron could make withdrawal talks easier for Britain following his victory over far-right and Eurosceptic rival Marie Le Pen. He made the comments as he visited Thomas Dudley Limited with the Conservative Dudley North candidate Les Jones as the Tories ramped up its campaigning in the target constituency. They toured the foundry on Birmingham New Road and met with some of the firm's 400 workers and spoke about Brexit with Joint Managing Director Jason Parker. Mr. Davis said, "Brexit in a way is the foundation of what happens next. If we get, as we intend to, a successful Brexit with a continued good relationship within the European Union and continued access to markets, not membership, which is frictionless with no tariffs and no restrictions, that will underpin the whole economic effort." He added, "This part of England is the engine of the United Kingdom, and it always has been. For virtually most of the Industrial Revolution, it has been the productive part and the machine room of the empire throughout its history. Today, it is the same. I have been walking around this very interesting, fabulous factory when one of the chief executives, who's at his father's funeral recently, said, 'This company is about people making profits, about developing skills and investing in people, making things and in the course of making things, building people into skilled personnel.' That is an incredibly important part of what the Black Country is. It's part of its character and its psyche. What we are aiming to do is to encourage that, to allow it to develop, be a world beater like it has been for a century."
Firefighters had to rescue a family and their two dogs through a first floor window of their home after a fire broke out. Mark Broadbent, his wife Lynn, their two teenage daughters and two dogs were rescued from the property above their butcher's shop in Coesley. The blaze caused around £100,000 worth of damage to the business, home, and destroyed their car, work van, fridge, equipment and meats. Mark said it was scary stuff. We were panicking. I looked out of the window at the back and saw that the back of my shop was on fire. I was thinking, how long will we be in here? His 17-year-old daughter, Georgina, first raised the alarm after returning home with her younger sister, Emily, 13, who had been to guides. She spotted the fence at the back of the property was on fire and before running inside to alert her parents. Two good Samaritans passing by tried to rescue Mark's youngest daughter to safety while firefighters raced to the scene. A young man accompanied by a middle-aged man used a ladder to try and get her down, but all four were eventually rescued by firefighters using a ladder from their first floor window. But getting their two dogs down, a Lurcher Cross called Sam and a greyhound called Tigger, proved trickier. At this point, one gentleman climbed up the ladders and assisted the fire brigade in escorting the dogs down the ladder, said Mark. Pictures taken following the aftermath of the fire show the interior of the shop charred and blackened, while both his car and van, which were taken away by recovery crews, were burnt out. Lynn's equipment that she used to run a market stall was also damaged. But he has vowed he will not be put out of business, and he reopened his shop 3 days after the blaze.
An historic Stourbridge church has been put up for sale following its closure at the start of the year. St John's United Reformed Church, which dates back to 1860, held its last service on January the 1st after its congregation dwindled to around just 8 members. The landmark ring road facing Grade 2 listed building had been home to numerous community groups and projects, including Rainbows and Guides, the Black Country Food Bank and the town's radio station Black Country Radio. But the voluntary broadcasters moved their studio to the waterfront towards the end of last year, while Food Bank moved to Our Lady and All Saints Roman Catholic Church Hall off New Road. St John's has also hosted music concerts and art exhibitions to try and invite the community in. But there had been no weddings, funerals or christenings for some time, and the church had been left without a minister following Reverend Stuart Scott's departure last October. The roof had also been leaking and was in desperate need of costly repairs, so churchgoers decided it was time to move out and move on. Owned by the United Reformed Church Trust, the 5,300 square feet building has now been put on the market with commercial property specialist Bullies, with offers in excess of £50,000 invited. It is being marketed for continued use for religious purposes or as a property which could be suitable for other uses.
Almost 150 patients faced cancelled operations at Russell's Hall Hospital due to bed shortages last year, 5 times more than the year before, new figures have revealed. A total of 149 people had their scheduled procedures cancelled at the Dudley Hospital last year, increasing from 29 in 2015. It comes after hospital bosses revealed bed blocking had reached an all-time high in March due to delays in the transfer of patients. Dudley Group NHS Trust, which manages the hospital, revealed the latest figures after being asked in a Freedom of Information request how many operations have been cancelled due to bed shortages over the past 3 years. The hospital replied with the figures, which also showed 81 operations were cancelled in 2014, but would not comment because of Purdah rules governing the elections. Out of the 149 cancelled operations last year, the hospital said 104 of the patients were operated on within 28 days of their procedure being called off, 33 were operated on after 28 days, and 12 were not operated on. Patients scheduled on 28 days or more after their original scheduled operation included some who had chosen to wait longer. Some had chosen not to undergo procedures, while in other cases operations were no longer required, the Trust said. Dudley UKIP councillor Paul Brothwood said, "The NHS is really bearing the brunt of the cuts. I don't want to see any figures like that. Unless massive investment is made, we should expect to see more cancellations." The number of people no longer needing to be in hospital rose after Christmas, with the most up-to-date total being 154. At the end of January, the Trust says 682 out of the 723 beds at the hospital were full, more than 85%, which NHS safety guidelines state should be an absolute maximum.
A family kept four dogs locked up in squalid pens and another in such a bad state it had to be put down, a court heard. RSPCA officers found the pets in appalling conditions when they raided the house in Sedgley, magistrates were told. Two German shepherds and two German shepherd husky crosses were kept outside in pens filled with urine and faeces, and at the time had no access to water. A Jack Russell called Honey, who lived inside the house on Turl Street, was found to have gnawed away at a tumour and had not been taken to the vets. When the dog was rescued, it was decided she was in such a bad condition she should be put to sleep. Owners David and Diane Roberts and Diane's daughter Naomi Hayden admitted 9 charges each relating to causing unnecessary suffering to animals and failing to meet their needs at Birmingham Magistrates Court. Mr. Rafe Turner, prosecuting on behalf of the RSPCA, told how the dogs suffered with a range of problems, including dental disease, ear infections and skin conditions. On a scale of 1 to 9, with 1 being emaciated, one of the dogs scored 2 and another 2.5, Mr. Turner said. He added, at the time of intervention, there was no evidence that the dogs outside had access to fresh water. They weren't able to display normal behaviour patterns simply because they were kept for so long in these pens. When questioned, Mrs. Roberts, aged 52, said the dogs in the pens were mostly the responsibility of her husband, as she struggled to get outside due to mobility problems and the decking was slippy. Mr. Roberts said he let the dogs out for 15 minutes a day and said the dogs weren't taken to the vets because it was too expensive. Hayden, 25, who owned Honey, claimed she was going to do something about it, but that the RSPCA came before she could.
With Stourbridge Police Station set to close in July after more than 100 years serving the community, Dudley Council are being urged to do all they can to keep a police presence in the town. Councillor Steve Clark said that he is determined for police to still be based in the town centre following the closure on July the 30th and is calling for the local authority to locate officers in one of the council-owned buildings. He said, "The police station is going and unfortunately there is nothing we can do about that. It's a done deal. But a police presence here is absolutely vital as we need to assure the people of Stourbridge that they are safe. What I want to do is put together something like a community hub in either the Crystal Leisure Centre or the Town Hall. We have plenty of council-owned buildings in the town which would be ideal for this kind of thing and it would be at no extra cost to the public. I have spoken to Sarah Norman, Dudley Council's chief executive, and she agrees with me and shares the same desires as I do. I think Stourbridge is a great place to be. We have a very busy town centre and people need to feel safe there." Ms Norman said the council is actively looking at opportunities to share accommodation with the police as part of its One Public Estate programme. The force is in the process of shutting down 28 stations across the region in an estimated saving of £8.5 million and it is part of a bid to reduce its overall budget by £130 million by 2020. West Midlands Police and Crime Commissioner David Jimison said, "We are already actively working with Dudley Council to find a site where we can co-locate."
A Boris bike rental scheme is being planned for Wolverhampton. German company Next Bike has revealed the city is among its next prime locations to set up its bike sharing scheme and could be brought into the city by autumn. The cycles got the nickname Boris Bikes after being introduced in London during the Foreign Secretary's time as mayor. Up to 750 bikes could be available for anyone in the city, which could mean up to 75 bike terminals across Wolverhampton. The system works by bikers using either a smartphone app or by calling a hotline number, collecting the bikes from terminals once registered, and people can use the bikes in all Next Bike cities and countries. For other UK Next Bike cities, users can sign up to either an annual subscription tariff option or a casual fare option. The bikes, which are worth around £1,000, have integrated locks, GPS on board, and a number of anti-theft measures integrated. If brought in, it could ease congestion and improve health and mobility within the city. The public bike rental scheme, which already operates in 120 locations across the world, could see hundreds of bikes available in the city 24/7, with starting costs about £1 an hour. Next Bike Managing Director Julian Scriven, originally from Bewdley, said Wolverhampton was an ideal place to bring in the bikes. He added, "I'm from the Kidderminster area and we're aware of the potential for the West Midlands. Wolverhampton is one of the top areas for local transport use, and with 10% of people using it and 30% of people already walk and cycle to work. The council is forward-looking, and should we get support from them, phase one could be in place by autumn. Support from the councils is the deciding factor of where to roll it out next."
It was lights, camera, action as Hollywood rolled into the Black Country for the filming of Stan and Ollie, the new Laurel and Hardy movie. Crowds stopped and stared as funny man Steve Coogan and Hollywood star John C. Reilly mingled with filming crew and cast members at the Black Country Living Museum. Tight security surrounded the 1930 street, where children and costumed police officers were marched up and down the street as directors placed Coogan in different positions on the set. One onlooker said, "It's been fascinating. It's not every day that you see Steve Coogan out and about in Dudley." She added, "It was amazing watching him and John C. Reilly perform. It was a real treat." Wearing a grey waistcoat and purple tie with his hair slicked back, Coogan joined Reilly to film a short scene on a fictional zebra crossing. White strips were laid down on the road surface as two Morris miners were positioned nearby. The comedy duo held up crossing patrol plaques reading, "Stop, children crossing," as directors shouted, "Action." Both burst into character as they rehearsed the scene with crew members acting as children. Between takes, Coogan was escorted in and out of Hobbs Restaurant as the museum's shops played the perfect backdrop to the film. Children dressed in the 1930s clothes waited near the railings, as Coogan often popped out to share a laugh and a joke with them. He seemed to be a fan of the museum too. Looking around the set and pointing at different buildings while the film crew scurried around him. The film is about the duo's final tour in 1953.
Speeding motorists in Stourbridge are being clamped down on after police joined forces with a community speed enforcement group. What started as an event where local residents would monitor the traffic and enforce speed limits, Stourbridge Community Speed Watch, that's SCSW, is now fully supported by West Midlands Police. The scheme, initially set up as a result of concerns from residents in Pedmore and Norton in relation to the high level of speeding vehicles in built-up areas, enables volunteers to work within the community, raising awareness of the dangers of speeding and helping control the problem. Mark Pickering, who represents the group, said that its purpose was to promote safer driving in the local community by educating rather than prosecuting individuals. He said, "The group is particularly concerned with the high levels of speeds that some drivers were undertaking where a 30 miles per hour limit was in place. Anyone who breaks the limit excessively, particularly in built-up areas, is a danger to every other road user and pedestrian, putting lives at risk. The scheme operates from data collected by SCSW before being passed to West Midlands Police, who check a national computer database and issue warning letters to those caught speeding, with persistent offenders being visited by the police. The group has also been backed by Police and Crime Commissioner David Jimison, who has recently provided members with necessary equipment to carry out their role, including a pro laser for day and night use, allowing the group to undertake speed checks on a more regular basis.
A cruel wedding thief stole more than £8,000 worth of camera equipment during a couple's big day. Darren McTaggart from Bilston strolled into Pendrell Hall in Codsall Wood, pretending to make an inquiry about booking his own wedding there, a court heard. But the 37-year-old walked out with camera equipment and cash after spotting bags unattended. The equipment belonged to Sean Cullis, a PCSO with Worcester Police, who took photographs as a hobby and had been asked to document the wedding of Richard Jones and Anna Marie from Bridgnorth. Cannock Magistrates Court heard that McTaggart, who pleaded guilty to one count of theft, had left the venue after stealing three bags from a room on the ground floor. Despite being warned he could face jail, McTaggart was given a 21-week sentence suspended for 18 months and told to pay £6,300 in compensation for the equipment and £500 for the victim's distress. He would also have to pay a £115 victim surcharge and was told to carry out 120 hours unpaid work. He was captured by a CCTV and later identified by police. The court heard that McTaggart of Lime Grove had sold on the equipment at a knockdown price, and when caught, he had tried to get it back, offering to pay more than he had sold it for. However, he was unsuccessful. The memory cards containing that day's photos were eventually returned. However, the incident left Mr. Cullis, who has a family and was expecting a child with his wife in the months after the wedding, devastated. Mrs. Maggie Meekin, prosecuting, said, on the advice of staff at the venue, the victim had left his equipment in a room. He had gone outside to take aerial photographs using a drone when he was approached by a child who asked if a lens he'd found in the car park belonged to him. In a victim statement after the wedding, he said he was devastated and had trouble sleeping ever since.
Hundreds of children in the West Midlands are being counselled for overwhelming exam stress, new research has revealed. Counsellors carried out 850 sessions in the past 2 years, mostly with youngsters in the 12 to 15 year age group. However, this year saw the biggest rise, up to 21% on 2015 to 16 among 16 to 18-year-olds preparing for A-levels. More than a fifth of the counselling sessions took place in May. Pupils faced with exams are turning to Childline, telling counsellors that they are struggling with subjects, excessive workloads and feeling unprepared. Charity bosses say that young people are consistently telling counsellors that exam stress is contributing to depression, anxiety, panic attacks, excessive crying, low self-esteem, self-harming and suicidal thoughts, or making pre-existing mental health conditions worse. Peter Wanless, the chief executive of the NSPCC, said, every year, we hear from thousands of children who are struggling to cope with the pressure to succeed in exams. For some, this can feel so insurmountable that it causes crippling anxiety and stress, and in some cases contributes to mental health issues or even suicidal thoughts and feelings. Exams are important, but worrying and panicking about them can be counterproductive, leaving young people unable to revise and prepare. It is vital that young people are supported by family, friends and teachers during the exam period to help them do the best that they can. Childline is also here 24/7 for any young person needing confidential support and advice.
And with that final news item from Joyce, We'll now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Beth.
It's goodbye from Sue.
And goodbye from Joyce.